Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 882, which is brought to you by Stamps.com. Don't go to the post office, for crap's sake. It's just going to upset you. All the waiting, and the lines, and the parking lines. So buy and print official U.S. postage, any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer. You can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a four-week trial plus postage in a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Nerdist. That's Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist. Never go to the post office again. Hey, how about some Nerdist community corkboard business? Jordan writes, I am in the Minneapolis area looking to either form or join a D&D group. I figured the corkboard would be the perfect place to go. I have a changeling wizard slash bard, in parentheses comedian, who is on a quest to defeat the Dark Lord. If you have any interest, please email me, jordan.rich0913@gmail.com. And I guess it's implied that murderers should not inquire. Let's just have this guy get into a safe, friendly D&D group. That would be fantastic. Erica Case writes, Hi, I'm Erica Case. Along with my 80-year-old musician grandmother, we do a music-themed podcast based out of Nashville, Tennessee. We have monthly episodes with musical guests and interview them, as well as doing corresponding cover songs for each show. This sounds fantastic. We've had notable guests like CJ Ramone of the Ramones. Check us out, bessandericahour.podbean.com. That is amazing and so exciting. And what a great way to bond with your grandmother. Oh, man. Now I'm going to check that out. Now that I've said it, I'm going to check it out. And hopefully you guys will come to a show the next time I perform in Nashville. And this one's from Katie Levine. And she writes, I know I brought this up recently. That's fine. But I keep seeing desperate posts on social media about it. And then a frowny emoticon. She says, 4th of July weekend is the busiest time of year for shelters because they get a lot of runaway animals scared of fireworks. Lots of shelters are already full, desperately seeking fosters. Here in LA, city shelters have the 4 days, 4 lives event where you can foster an animal for 4 days, and shelters all around the country need help too. If you're able to foster for a few days, please visit or call your local shelter. This episode is Trey Parker. You know Trey Parker, creator of South Park, Book of Mormon, Team America, along with Matt Stone. Matt was not on this episode of the podcast. Matt is on the East Coast, I believe. He does not live in Los Angeles for most of the year when South Park is not in production. Trey is in Despicable Me. He plays the villain in Despicable Me. I saw the first chunk of the movie, and it's great. Chris, why did you only watch the first chunk of the movie? Well, I explained that in the podcast. I went to Illumination to meet with a nice gentleman over there by the name of Brett, and he showed me the first few minutes of the movie, and then I had to go do my festival and do At Midnight stuff, so I did not see the whole movie while I was at Illumination, but what I saw looked fantastic. And Trey's always been really, really sweet, really nice to me. Good guy. He and Matt were I actually moderated their podcast panel last year at San Diego Comic-Con. I was going to put that out as a podcast. The only recording we were able to get did not sound good. It was an external microphone, so it was very echoey in Hall H. I explained this on the podcast, so you just sat through it twice, potentially, unless you're fast-forwarding through this, which you probably are, because boy do I go on. I am a gabber. But Trey's great, and Katie and I went down to South Park Studios and got to do the podcast there, and all over the conference room we were in were just storyboards and scenes from the new South Park game, The Fractured Butthole, which I'm also incredibly excited about. But Despicable Me is in theaters Friday, June 30th, so go check that out. This episode of the podcast also brought to you by MeUndies, which, let's see, yep, got them on right now. They are hugging my man baggage. And I have to say, I am very particular about this because chafing is no fun for anybody because it happens and you don't enjoy it. And then your significant other certainly does not enjoy hearing about it. But MeUndies are the softest, most comfortable underwear you will ever wear. Period. And I was a longtime customer of MeUndies before they became a sponsor on the Nerdist podcast, so I am very happy that they are now a sponsor on the podcast. Every pair is sustainably sourced, made from micromodal, a fabric that is 3 times softer than cotton. And if you're used to buying boring underwear, MeUndies will change everything. They have limited edition patterns each month that always sell out. And this month's patterns were designed by the legendary 80s clothing brand Cross Colors, which I bought a ton of stuff on in college. Oh my God, I had so much CrossColor stuff. You have to see them for yourself right now. Save 20% on your first pair. Receive free shipping only at MeUndies.com/Nerdist. There's a reason MeUndies has sold over 5 million pairs to date. You will feel it when you put them on. And if you don't love your first pair of MeUndies, they are free. Get 20% off your first pair, plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/Nerdist. That is MeUndies.com/Nerdist. Here's the Nerdist Podcast number 882 with Trey Parker.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Oh, of course, no worries. Thanks for letting us come here. Are you? What are you recording today?
It's all a video game. Yeah, Trey. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, Katie was saying Stick of Truth is the only video game she's ever played.
Really?
And her boyfriend, she said she played almost the entire game without modding her weapons. And her boyfriend was like, you know you can mod your weapons. And she was like, oh, this makes this so much better.
That's the thing you get.
Yeah, there's a lot more modding in this one.
Yeah, last time I was here, Matt was showing me some of the stuff, yeah. And it's just like the combat system was...
Yeah, it's better.
Was incredible.
Yeah. We're just in that typical, you know, what would be a Tuesday on South Park, we're just in that, like, crunch now where it's just like, fuck. So.
Except it's a video game that's
coming. Yeah.
I was actually just at Illumination.
Oh, really?
I was meeting with Brett, and he showed me the first chunk of Despicable Me 3.
Yeah.
And it's fucking great.
Well, you've seen more of it than I have.
Just know that it's great. Because right. The opening scene is you.
Yeah, but the opening scene is the trailer, basically, right? Isn't it? The whole heist with the...
Yeah, kind of the heist, but it's like but it's a full-on music video at the top. Is it weird for you to work on someone else's? The guy said, did you just hire Matt? Or did you just hire Trey? Or did he write the thing? And he goes, no, we just hired him as an actor.
I know, and it's funny, because everyone... If I'm involved with something, people assume I'm writing it, too, which is probably because people know I'm a control freak, but I... But that was my thing. I'm like, I don't want to read it. I don't want to, you know, and I had them pitch it to me and explain what was going on in scenes and stuff like that. But I didn't, you know, as soon as it was like, oh, and then you're doing this. And I was like, wouldn't it be cool if I was, and I was just like, nope, not doing it. You know, I would have driven them crazy too. So it really was just, you know, like I told them the first time that I went in to the booth and read their lines, and then they said, okay, thank you. And I went, what should I do today? Like, was the craziest feeling instead of, because usually to me, that's the beginning. You record the lines, and then your brain starts working, going, okay, what if that worked? What if it didn't? How do we start getting this thing? And for me to just like record and then go to the park with my daughter was like, it's like, man, what a life.
Yeah,
this is amazing.
That was your version of Katie modding the weapons.
Yeah, exactly.
You could do that?
Yeah, you could do that. What? Yeah, totally.
No, I'm supposed to shit blood for like 5 days.
Yeah, what? I'm supposed to want to kill myself.
We did this. I had a really great chat with you guys at Comic-Con, and I wanted to put it out as a podcast. And they go, sure. So they sent us the audio. And it was all recorded on external mics.
Oh, really?
And so the entire thing was like, watch. Like, and it was all completely audio-wise unusable because it just, there was a mic like in the back of the room. So you were just hearing the sound bounce against the four corners of this airplane hangar of a room. But that was really fun. Are you guys going this year?
No, hell no. We go if we have to. But, you know, I mean, and I actually love it. It was fun. The last Comic-Con, I just went down and walked around the floor. You know, it was great because I mean, I'm into that shit. That's me. You know, those are my people. But even for me, I mean, it's just gotten so big and it's so overwhelming. You know,
can you walk the floor without getting harassed too much?
Yeah, if you walk around and don't act like, you know, it was pretty funny because Matt was walking around with like two bodyguards and a baseball hat and sunglasses. And I'm like, well, people are going to go, who the fuck is that? You know, for me, I was just like, I just walked around the front. People would, you know, just bump into me and whatever. It was fine, you know, so.
When's the game come out?
Well, I think it's supposed to come out in October. It was actually supposed to come out last Christmas, which I knew we weren't going to make. But it's now supposed to be October, which means we've got to be done here in a few weeks because it's a big process it goes through. You know, it's not like a show where we can finish it, throw it up on the air.
Right.
It's a lot of stuff to do, so we're in the weeds right now for sure.
How does I'm guessing that
Does anything ever feel finished to you?
No.
I didn't think so. Ever.
Ever. I've never had one South Park where I'm like, okay, it's good. It's always like, how many more minutes do I have? And then I hand it off going, oh, God, I could have made it so much better every single time.
I mean, I wonder if it, because it is the perfect, this is the perfect kind of show business thing to get, which is you have your own thing. You've been able to do it for a long time. No one tells you how to do it.
Yeah.
You can do whatever you want within reason, I guess. But I imagine the stress of that, too. Like, I my stomach kind of knots up thinking about, like, oh, fuck, if you could do anything, but then you have this limited amount of time.
Well, yeah, for the show, that's true. The show, it's actually, the biggest curse is, okay, we can do anything. It actually starts to help the more we have. By Sunday, it's like, okay, well, we have this and we can't cut it. So you get more limited and limited as you go.
Right.
The interesting thing with, like, a video game is you're working with another company. And, of course, with a video game, we're working. We have meetings on, you know, video where we're here at South Park, and we're meeting with Ubisoft in San Francisco, a team in Norway, a team in Japan, and we're all trying to, like, get this joke across. You know what I mean? And it's just, like, it's tough.
How do I explain the cultural humor in a way that...
Yeah, and you've got all these gamers going, well, no, then you should go over and pick up the thing. I'm like, no, it's funnier if you don't know where it is. And things like that they're just, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah,
things
yeah.
they know that we don't get and things we know that they
don't
get.
Well, because they're all thinking game mechanics.
Exactly.
And you're like, oh, I'm comedy.
Yeah,
this has
yeah,
to be funny.
Yeah, yeah. No one's going to buy this game for the sweet game mechanics.
No. But, I mean, I think, you know, Stick of Truth did such an amazing job of the thing that I think people always wanted, which was playing in their cartoon, like playing in their favorite show, and actually not having that, because, you know, you and I probably grew up around the same time. So I was like, well, it sort of looks like E.T., but it's not really.
I mean, yeah. But that feeling, too, of, I mean, I grew up loving RPGs, and I grew up loving Ultima, and, you know, Mother was one that I really loved because Mother was this little RPG where you were a kid, and it started in your backyard, and this UFO land, and it just felt like, oh, I'm a kid running around and doing my thing, and oh, I'm going to fight this rat. You know, it wasn't like, oh, okay, I'm this huge death demon knight and I'm fighting this giant, you know, things were very grounded, which I like. And so apart from just being like, oh, I like, you know, something where I can walk around the show, I also just like RPGs where I can, you know, I can, it can be a little bit real and I can be a kid playing a game.
Right.
You know, because it's something we all want to do again, is go play out in the street.
I would imagine you must have been a D&D guy then.
Oh, totally.
Yeah,
still
yeah,
am. Yeah.
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 How often do you guys get to play?
Not as much as I'd want, but, you know, I always end up being the DM because I guess I'm the better storyteller. But I would love to not always have to be the DM. But you know, it's funny because doing a video game is being a DM in a huge way. It's trying to kind of try to sort of second guess what the player's going to do, but also leaving it open that if they don't do that, you've got options and they can do it their way. And, you know, having lulls and then big moments of excitement and lulls, you know, and so it's funny how it is very similar to being a DM.
Yeah, there are definitely people who are just really cut out to be DMs, and then if you're not, you shouldn't do it because it's not. I don't think that part's fun because I just want to play.
Yeah,
I don't want to have to control everything and then look behind the tower of like, okay,
yeah. Well, and I'm also very much a DM that is, you know, I want everyone to just have a good time. And
yeah.
I want everyone to win.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm always going to improvise to make things go their way a little more and not let them know.
Right.
You know what I mean? So things like that.
That's very sweet.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about, especially when you're, you know, I have a stepson who's 16 now and he started playing. I introduced him to it when he was 12 and he was so into video games. Couldn't get him away from video games. But after like 6 months of D&D, he would drop any video game to sit and play D&D in the living room, which was amazing.
Well, it does the thing which network gaming does, which is it connects you to people, but it actually connects you to people and you have to learn to work together.
Yeah,
and you have to learn to improvise.
Well, and the fact that anything's possible.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just like, you know, he would be like, okay, so I want to hang out with that girl for a while. And it's like, okay, you hang out with the girl for a while. It's like, roll for charisma, you know?
I mean, RPGs were always my favorite game, but I find that they're harder and harder to play because I was able to play Zelda because of the Switch.
Yeah.
Because I can take it everywhere.
Yes.
But for the most part, there's some, like, I sat down to play Witcher a couple years ago, or I guess, it was maybe like a year and a half ago, and I played for like 3 hours. And I was like, I don't have any time anymore. Like, that was it.
Well, and there's certain things about those games. Like, The Witcher really bugged me because, first of all, there's a big move toward, and I can see why, because it happens with both our games, too. It's just so hard. A lot of these games become what I call cutscene hunter.
Right,
where
right,
it's basically
right.
like there's a cutscene, and then you walk over here, and another cutscene starts.
Yeah.
And then you go over and you press X on this, and another cutscene starts. And it's just like I'm using the term cutscene. I'm like, do not let this become cutscene hunter, because it's not. It's supposed to be a game, you know? But it's also my big pet peeve in RPGs is when my character speaks for me. And in The Witcher, it was a real problem because that guy's always just like, you know, like, there's got to be something up in that tree. And I'm like, that's not what I sound like. That's not what I would say. That's not, you know, and especially those dialogue trees that's like, mm-hmm. you know, okay, do I say, hey, you better get out of here, or hey, why don't you leave, or hey, and it's like, those are all the same thing.
They're kind of the
and
same
I don't want to say any of those.
With slightly different tonal. The games where you're choosing, where you're essentially choosing your alignment along the way, I don't love because I always feel like, did I pick the wrong thing? Am I not going to get a good ending?
Based on grammar.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? And it's like, it's not really, and that's why I did it for the Stick of Truth, and I really wanted it in this game too, is that like Zelda, because I love Zelda. And one thing I love about Zelda is, about Link, is that he doesn't talk.
That's right.
And so because he doesn't talk, what you think and what you think you would say is what comes out in the character, you know? And so that was always really important to me, and I just made it a thing. And Stick of Truth, that's like, the character doesn't talk, you know? And, and it makes it, a lot of times it makes it way harder to write, you know, because you can't, you know, you got to interact with people in a different way. But to me, that makes it a lot cooler. It's like going to theater. I want to fill the blanks in myself.
Did you play Breath of the Wild at all?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I played it hours, you know, and I finally, you know, I don't know how much of it I completed, but I really appreciate. There's two kinds of gamers though. That's the thing, is that there's still, and I know this because I'm a huge board game player, and I have like two board game nights a week. I'm huge into board games aside from D&D. That's that basically there's the kind of players that no matter what, especially with like a Euro game, to them it's blue chips and red chips and green chips, and I'm going to get more blue chips and I can trade in my red chips for this.
Right.
And for other people, it's, no, we're in a mansion. and the green chips are ghosts, but those ghosts are coming in. You know, and it's like, there's the people that just really get into the theme of things.
Right.
And people that really get into the mechanics of things. And it's funny because, like, my wife and I play a lot of board games, and we are on completely... We played a game... Like, for instance, there's a game called Elder Sign, which is... really a dice rolling game. It's almost Yahtzee. Basically, you're rolling dice and you're picking dice to keep, but they depend on, did you fight the monster? Did you sneak by the monster? Did you do this? Is your health low? And you're going into things. And we probably played that game for 6 months before I was like, well, you know, it's another Lovecraft monster. And she's like, what's Lovecraft? And I'm like, this is a whole H.P. Lovecraft game that we've been playing. And she doesn't care. To her, it's just there's the yellow dice and there's red dice and there's these dice. And we're both having fun. But to me, I'm sneaking around a mansion fighting monsters. And to her, she's just purely, oh, those go together. Those don't. These, you know.
Well, that's the perfect kind of game. I mean, I was able to get my wife. I think I played Breath of the Wild. I'm definitely over 200 hours.
Yeah.
But the only thing I haven't. I just haven't run around and collected 900 Koroks, but everything else I did.
Yeah.
And so my wife saw me. I had gotten her addicted to 3DS, and she was playing. She saw me playing Switch, and she was like, oh, I'm going to get one of those. And then she started playing Zelda. So now she's going through all the, wait, how do I get into this divine beast? And I'm like, That was 100 hours ago. I don't remember.
Yeah,
I don't know. But did you go to E3?
No. Again, I don't have to. I had to last year. this year they had game to show, so they actually brought a level.
Yeah.
So that was the star. You know, when it was all theoretical, we had to be the star and talk about stuff. But now they've got things to show. So,
I mean, gaming is brave water to wade into, especially if you care a lot about it.
Yeah.
Because listen, you know, gamers are very opinionated.
Yeah.
Then they will let you know how opinionated they are. I mean, I'm sure you're no stranger to having people go, fuck you, how can you say this, or how can you do that?
Yeah.
But something, you know, but gaming is such an integral part of so many of our identities.
Yeah.
That if something is, and now, of course, we're conditioned that if something isn't 100% the way that we envision it should be, then we flip the fuck out.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I also know, you know, I have, again, like... My board game collection is probably like 120 games that I have in this shelf. And depending on who comes over, I can go, oh, okay, we're playing this game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's so many different games and personalities go together. So once you figure that out, and that's why, to me, trying to make a game that appeals to everyone is just impossible.
Right.
And in fact, the way that Matt and I are very different gamers. Matt's not even really a big RPG player. He's a shooter. He's a first person shooter. He wants to go in, be told what to do, and go mow down as many guys as possible. And I hate being held by the hand. I want it to be more like Zelda, where I'm like, what's behind there? Mm-hmm. Oh, what if I keep going down this valley? And even if that, you know, to Matt, if it's like, I want to keep going down this valley, and it's like, oh, there was nothing there, he'd be like, what the fuck did I just spend all that time doing that for? And to me, it's like, oh, there's nothing there. I got to go back the other way.
I know. You know? I played Skyrim for about a year and a half, and I spent the last few months just fucking running errands because I just wanted run around. I was like, well, I guess this house needs cabbages in it, so I'll just fill this house with cabbages and adopt a kid and just put a kid in this house. But I think you guys, though, really, it almost seems like you sort of pioneered the fan-driven entertainment idea of, oh, these guys are just fans of the stuff that they're making. There was no...
Yeah.
You know, it was like, oh, they wanted to make this, and so they made this because they're fans. Like, you're in the demographic of the stuff you're making, which is...
No, and that was part of why, you know, it was like we... Matt and I were both really gamers before anything, you know what I mean? So we had learned the lesson from the show of, like, look, nothing else matters except that we do what we think is funny. And maybe that demographic will change and maybe we'll start losing people. But if it's not funny to us, it's not sincere. And it's not like, well, this is what people think's funny right now, so let's do it. It's the same thing. You know, it's just like, I'm gonna make a game that I would want to play. You know what I mean? And that's, you know, and of course it never turns out exactly the way you want. But that's at least where you got to start.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because as soon as you're, you know, making some, well, this is what people like, I guess I'll make that. Then it's just like, you might as well not even do it.
Yeah.
Know?
And now... Now that the South Park seasons are really taking these, like, cinematic arcs, was that a conscious decision in the terms of, like, well, we've done a lot of standalone episodes, but now, you know, let's really kind of create, like, a miniseries?
It was totally accident. It started, like, 3 seasons ago. We kind of just started crossing some things over and carrying some things over. And then we did the big PC Principal season that we kind of really started. You know, at first we were like, oh, man, all these shows have to do with PC stuff, we've got to get off of it. But then we're like, why? We're like, well, if there's that much material, let's just fucking do it, you know? And so we kept basically, we kind of kept at it, and we kept things hanging over, and people kind of liked it. So that then we finally said, all right, let's just go all out. Let's actually do a serialized season where we kind of map it out and know where we're headed. And it was like the biggest disaster for us, just production wise. We're just not that show. You know what I mean? And it's like and I'm not that kind of person. I need to walk into South Park on Thursday morning and go, what are we doing?
Right.
You know what I mean? And for me to walk in on Thursday and go, okay, let's see. This is left hanging here. This is doing here. This is doing... It really became a nightmare. I really didn't like it. Whereas doing it a little bit where it's like, okay, let's do something totally new. Oh, we could bring in that thing from last week. That's fine. But I think we're going to go back more to that.
You're going to go back more to that. Because this last season had an incredible arc.
Yeah.
There's, you know, there's trolling and there's the election. And
and trying to make that parallel and everything between trolls and Trump and us, you know, and just comedy in general. And, you know, it was all interesting stuff. It's just that, you know, it probably would have been better to do something like that over a year, you know, having more than 8 weeks to do it in, because shit changed so fast.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing, is that you're doing an arc, but you don't know how reality is going to play out, so you have to, like, keep this arc running in the background.
I can't tell you how many times in that we have this really funny scene, and we're like, okay, whatever it is, this is a really funny scene. And then we would wake up the next morning, and it's like, Trump actually just went and did that. And it's like, it's not parody anymore. It's not even like, you can't make fun of it. You know what I mean? Like, so it just sort of became more of a, you know, of trying to make the parallels between trolling and everything like that. But again, I think that given more time, we could have been more precise. But, you know, so I also miss, I do, you know, it's, and especially last season was a bitch, but the season before that was pretty cool and fun with the PC Principal stuff. But even in that, I miss Cartman dressing up like a robot and farting on Butters. You know what I mean? Like, that's like, I want to get back to that shit. And especially just because now everything you turn on, in any kind of comedy, it's like, okay, how are they making fun of Trump? What are they doing to rip on Trump? And it's
I know.
In the same way that I'm just sick of it being the headline every day.
Like, it's fatigue.
There's other shit in the world going on. And yeah, I get it. Everyone's, you know, freaked out. But it's just like, other shit's happening. You know, the life is happening still. And
yeah.
And that's what, you know, we'll see. You know, I really want to just get back to those things with the boys and hopefully have it be a nice break for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, a few weeks ago, we had a meeting on At Midnight where I said, you know, I just don't, unless something really crazy happens, I just don't want it to be the default setting because it is everywhere. And I think people in general are fatigued by it. And the media, I mean, it's this parasitic nature of the media sort of being like, oh, we're going to get clicks if we talk about this because it enrages people and they're passionate on both sides. And I guess I just feel like, you know, it'd be nice if our show was a little bit of a break. Like, if you want that, cool for you. There's a billion other places where you can see it. But I'm tired of saying it out loud. I'm tired of talking about it.
Yeah, no, and it's like, you know, like saying Trump is outrageous is just like, yeah, that's, he's not even going to argue with you. Like, that's not, there's so many other things in the world that are outrageous right now.
Yes.
That don't think they're outrageous.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's just like, it's, you know, that's why I'm just over it.
Well, when my wife, who's also a massive fan of the show, and I, you guys were very generous and let us come. I mean, it was, I don't know, at the end of the past season.
Yeah, it was like right in the middle.
It was during the middle. And so it was when you were recording it was that Bill Hicks moment.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, or he's like, oh, where'd I lose you?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that was such a fucking great reference that I had to, you know, my wife didn't, like, she's, I imagine similar, she just doesn't know a lot of people and things.
Yeah,
so, like,
because
she's a little bit young, she's 10 years younger, so 12 years younger, so she wouldn't know Bill Hicks.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had to explain to her, like, oh, he was this guy, this amazing comedian, and he often would fight with the audience and perform this really subversive stuff to the audience he was ripping on. And but that was such a fucking great, that was such a great moment to throw in. Was that, do you, like, with something like that, is that a very in the moment thing, or do you go, oh, it'd be fun to give him this kind of a character arc?
No, it was really, at that point it was watching Trump, it was right when the, what was the thing he said, grab her pussy?
Yeah.
It was the grab her pussy moment. And we were all sitting around talking about that and watching all these outraged people going, can you believe he said that? And we were like, where did he lose you? It's like, really? That was it? Like that's your line? Like, because it was just like all this shit. He said all these horrible things. And in a way, it was like, you know, the people that are going, oh, my God, I can't believe he said that. It was like, you can't believe he said that, but you were okay. And which we ended up just putting into the show, you know, with like all the Mexicans go home and all that. You were okay with that. Didn't, but grab her in the pussy was where he lost you.
Right, that was,
you know,
the line.
And it was just like, we were just, that, it literally came out of just, and we were saying, it's, you know, it sounded like a Bill Hicks, Andrew Dice Clay thing of just like, you know,
Dice.
Line? Well, it was both, they've both done it, you know, but Dice was the big one. There was the great, I think it was the day the laughter died. And there was just this great moment where Dice is just up there and people are not laughing. It was right when people are starting to turn on him and he's just doing his act. You know, and people forgot it was an act. He's playing a character.
Right.
It's like me going up and being Cartman. You know what I mean? It's like he was going up and being a character. And people were just over it, not laughing. But he just kept going and he kept going. And he finally said something. This woman was leaving. He's like, where are you going, sweetheart? And he's like, oh, where did I lose you? And he starts, because he had been going on for an hour. And he's like, oh, that was the thing, huh? You know, and it was just like, it was just totally how we felt about Trump. It was just like, you're going to be outraged now? You know what I mean? So,
yeah, I think I was confusing it with the moment. There's a great clip of Bill Hicks. I mean, it's a fun, uncomfortable thing to watch. But he's in a club, and he's talking about something. And this woman just goes, you suck. And it's just the insipid nature of that heckle just unhinged him.
Yeah,
it was like, you piece of shit, you drunk piece of shit, get the fuck out of here, you fucking stick.
Yeah.
And he just, it's clear he goes into this mode where it's like, oh yeah, I don't think he's not in control of that anymore. He's just, all the rage that he feels about the people that he's performing for have just been fire hosed at this.
Yeah.
And then he just stops and he was like, how are you going to get out of this one, Bill? Yeah. Like, how do you backpedal out of that?
No, and it's, you know, it's a common thing, but it was just like that. It was watching, it was also what we were saying. It was like Trump's, And what was interesting was Trump's thing were starting to become comedy routines. They really were. The more he was out there, you know, campaigning, the more it started to feel like getting a bunch of people to laugh and being like, yeah, fuck them too, right? And
right.
Yeah, you know, it started to feel like there was a lot of laughing. There was him trying to make jokes. And then you saw Obama kind of reacting to it. He's starting to act like Chris Rock, going, Trump's out there saying da-da-da-da, you know, and you're just like, what the fuck is happening? Like, politics is just becoming stand-up
reality
comedy.
Television. It's just become reality,
you know,
television.
And that's where it's comedy. Just, you know, it's like, if you know, if the president's going to be a stand-up comic, then let him do his thing. You know, it's like, it's hard. You know, you don't do a lot of comedies ripping on other stand-up comics, because it's comedy ripping on comedy just usually isn't very funny.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the reason we're, you know, I'm not saying we're going to avoid it, but the reason that it just doesn't sound fun is because it's comedy ripping on comedy is usually not that funny.
Well, yeah, and also I'm sure there's probably trying to decide, you know, because I think South Park is one of the last pieces. You know, South Park, Rick and Morty, there's a couple shows that I think are just like the last pieces of safe social satire. And I don't mean safe in terms of how you approach comedy, but I mean in terms of you guys can get away with anything and it's okay. And so I think you're one of the last real voices for actual satire without going, God, are people going to be upset if we say this? Yeah. Or is this going to... Because it doesn't really...
Well, and that was really what that season with PC Principal was about, was we really were starting... The culture was changing and colleges were changing to the point that we thought, okay, this is coming. It's coming. Eventually, one of these days now, we're going to get, how dare they fucking did that, and we're going to get run out of town.
Right.
What people don't realize is we've been waiting for that moment for 20 years. Like, we seriously thought that was going to happen 20 years ago. And then we did the South Park movie, and we're like, okay, we're definitely run out of town. And we did Team America, and we're like, okay, we are getting fucking run out of town. And so we're just kind of hanging out, waiting for it to happen. We all have backup plans, you know. It's like, we have other shit we can do, you know, and we have things we're good at, and we have... You know, we're both still Colorado boys, you know, so it was always, we're always waiting to like, okay, when we go back to Colorado, you know.
Yeah, but I think you came in at the perfect time. It was just before, you know, just before internet entertainment had a really wide adoption rate. There was no social media. And so, you know, 97, 98, I think, so by the time, if you were launching the show now, I think it would be tougher. Than before.
Oh my God, no.
Because now people go, hey, this guy said this thing and I'm really upset. And they go, oh, well, you know, and South Park did this. Yeah, but that's South Park.
I know. That's the thing. We snuck in this pedigree. And if you look at those first six episodes where it was like, the outrageous thing we did was we had a little boy have a gay dog.
Right.
And people were like, oh my fucking God. Right? And it's just like, it's G-rated now. It's like shit you see in a Disney movie. You know what I mean? So it's just like we snuck in there and just slowly went, you know, like every week went, well, maybe we could say this now, you know? And it's like, there are lines we can point out and show. We're like, dude, we said this line. If any other show said this line,
it'd be over.
It'd be over.
The show would be over, and those people would not work again for a really long time. I mean, I almost feel like that's when you look at the. I don't know how much time you spend interneting, but just seeing the outrage cycle.
Yeah,
where you go, fuck, I think we've done worse than that. That's crazy
I know. But it is. It's a brand. It's almost the point. And people get that. You know, it's almost like you go to work and you're going to sound stupid if you go, man, I really got upset and offended by this thing I saw in South Park last night.
Like, well, then don't
people
watch
would be
it.
Like, oh, cool, what was it? Let me go see it. You know, it's just like, it's just a different, you know, but again, it doesn't mean that we're still waiting for it.
Right.
I mean, fishing poles are in the car.
But I think, you know, people have come to understand that. I feel like there's kind of a really beautiful equality to what you guys do, because you really will go after anything, anybody, equally.
Well, and the whole point of it that we did know from the beginning is that at the heart of it, there's supposed to be these two boys trying to figure life out.
Right.
And the two main boys, Stan and Kyle, are pretty much good kids. You know what I mean? They're good boys. They're not horrible people doing horrible things. They're good boys that are seeing all this shit. You know, it was all based on, from the first shows, it was all based on people ready to kill each other over an issue and cutting to the boys sitting there blinking their eyes and going, let's go get a sandwich. You know what I mean? And it was like, that's still what the heart of it is. And watching just as much as, you know, it's like, yeah, those people are evil that did that. Those people are horrible that did that. And it's like, yeah, well, you people on the other side are just as horrible and just as evil.
Right.
You know what I mean? That are getting that extreme. You know, it's all making fun of extremism, you know, and people that think they're right.
That's a perfect way to condense the show. It really is just about, it's satirizing extremism on all sides.
Yeah.
On all sides. You guys never did any, it was all cutouts in the beginning,
yes.
Right? So there was never any, I collect cells. There's no cells, right?
There are cells. I can show you.
From Spirit of Christmas?
I think Butters might have some, the animation director. I think he might have some from Spirit of Christmas, but we definitely have all the cells from the pilot episode that was all done on construction paper.
Ah, oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, and it's still, it's real construction paper, so it's fading. And, you know, it looks like something you made in elementary school, but.
I mean, listen, if there's any of it just lying around that someone who is on a similar network to yours could just set a bag of money down and then walk away.
Well, the smartest one was Eric Stau, who is Butters. He was sort of our assistant when we were making the pilot, and he just smart, without saying anything, without adding whatever, he put everything into plastic bins, and he still has it all, and he'll still once in a while put things together and make a cell.
God damn it. Yeah. This also, we have a couple of pinball machines at the house, and Lydia saw the one here, and then I think she played it somewhere and was like, well, we have to get a cell.
It's a good one.
It's a fucking great pinball machine.
It's a good pinball machine. I mean, it's from season one, so it's a lot of like really old shit. But,
yeah.
But it was well done.
Were you involved? Like, at what point, when the show starts taking off, and you guys are, your nature is subversive, but then all of a sudden their money starts coming in and people are like, oh, should we make South Park this and toys? Is there any point where you're like, I don't know, is that going to make it not cool anymore?
Yeah.
Or is that going to...
And definitely, like, you know, from day one, the show took off pretty fast. So really from a couple of weeks of the first show airing, there were people walking around with Cartman shirts on, and it was weird. I thought it would be really... I remember walking around and seeing, like, Beavis and Butthead shirts and stuff and be like, man, I wonder if one day there'd ever be something I drew on someone's shirt. And when I finally saw it, it actually felt weird. It actually felt like, wait, that's my thing.
Oh,
you
right.
know what I mean? You know, in a weird way. And it was both. It was flattering, too. But you know, yeah, it's a machine of its own, and we had to end up basically hiring someone who, again, we went to college with. It's like, you're the guy that says yes and no to, because we just can't sit there and say yes and no to every
right.
shirt and pinball machine and whatever. And it's like, we try to have some, you know, we have a quality control person that's like, something will come along and it's like, come on, this doesn't even look like Kenny. No. You know, and we've always tried to have at least that much where it's, there's a bit of a quality, you know,
right.
filter to things that we put out. And so.
How do you know when, do you have any sense of when you work on stuff other than South Park? Like, oh, this is going to work. This might not work. When things have worked or not worked, has it ever, have you identified like, oh yeah, I felt like that wasn't right, or, oh, I don't know, we just threw something out there.
And that's what's so funny is that when we always say this, after doing this for 21 years, we will come and sit in this room on Thursday and be like, what the fuck do we do? It feels like, how do you make a show? Every Thursday, it feels like, how do we do that? You know, and it feels like, we got to start with I don't know what you do. Like, it's so weird. And I think partly it's because we've done every episode ourselves. You know, we used to have this big joke of like, we can't do that. Simpsons did it. Can't do that. Simpsons.
Of course.
And now the joke is we can't do that. We did it. We can't do that. We did it. It's like we so many times we'll start coming up with a thing and we're like, oh, this sounds familiar. And then someone will be like, yeah, you guys did that. Season 6. Season 5. Just like, so it definitely gets harder to, you know, be original, but that's part of why it also gets to be a little more current, because it's like you've got to talk about new things and new things that are happening
right.
because we've already talked about all the old shit.
Yeah.
But at the same time, what fascinates me more are the kids and their relationships. You know, even to me, even the last season, you know, the stuff I liked was Cartman being in love. And or was he? And like
we never fully determined,
yeah,
did we?
But him acting in love and what that meant to him. But also just like the thing where the boys took Cartman up to this cabin and broke his shit, and watching, there were so many teenagers, especially, that there's this scene where the boys are like, they think Cartman's a troll, so they decide to take him up to the cabin one night, saying they're all going to play some big game together on the computer shit, and they tell him to bring his computer, and they come up, they take his computer and his cell phone and his laptop, and they smash it apart with a sledgehammer, right? And he's like, he's offline now. He's got no online life. And there were people, teenagers especially, people online going, wow, man, like, that was a heavy episode. Like, they didn't even try to be funny.
And it's like, no, that's funny. That's actually funny. And but people thought like, oh my God, they killed him. They took his shit, and they could. They really didn't see any humor in that. They really just saw, wow, can you imagine how horrible that
is? Yeah, because
would be?
So many people's identities are just fucking imprinted on their devices now. So it's like that's that. It is basically their ex. That is an external representation of their being.
Yeah,
I mean it's
and it's not. Yeah, it's not satirical anymore.
And so, what is? Do you have any idea? Kind of what you want to try for the next season, or is it just you're going to show up the first day?
That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
You know, there's things we've left hanging that we're going to... Well, we've left Cartman's relationship hanging. And you know, obviously, Garrison's president, but even, you know, we never... we rarely, you know, once every two seasons, we would check in with the president of the United States in South Park. It's not that show.
Right.
So I definitely am not going to just keep tracking Garrison because I don't care. I'm over it. And, you know, maybe he'll pop up once in a while when we need him. But again, it's really, I'm just kind of excited to get back to kids' issues and what kids are dealing with right now. And because it's fucking crazy.
Do you ever talk to your stepson about like, hey,
the time. No, I mean, that's, and a lot of it comes from that. You know, a lot of it, you know, when I'm like, you know, there's this whole thing about PewDiePie. He was huge into PewDiePie.
Right.
And I didn't know who the fuck PewDiePie was. And I would watch him on, and I'd be like, you're sitting here watching someone on YouTube play a video game. You're not playing a video game. You're watching someone for 2 hours play a video game and comment on it. Like, I'm like, I don't get that. And then I'd watch it enough with him and kind of try to make fun of it. I'd watch it enough going, I kind of get this. It is an art form, you know.
And is it, though? Because I know you did an episode about that.
Yeah.
About the little kids and then making fun of the slightly older kids. I mean, like, they're old. They don't understand.
Yeah, well, and it is that thing of, you know, we all know how fun it can be to sit there playing a video game and have your buddy sitting next to you on the couch going, go check out what's behind that tree. You know what I mean? And, like, and it's just, you know, you sort of feel like there's someone there with you and... And, you know, video games are still about the surprises and the big, you know, violent moments and all this. And you're kind of with someone going, ooh, you know what I mean? So, you know, I get it. But it is fascinating how watching, you know, there's been so many things, too, even with my stepson. It's like, you know, of course, he got to be 15 and I was stupid. You know, and I was like, he's just like, yeah, you just don't get it. And I'm like, oh, come on, I get it. Like, I kind of get it. And he's just like, no, you don't get it. And I remember he would go up and I can't remember what the situation was, but he's basically like, he goes, yeah, that's a derp. And I was like, what'd you say? And he goes, it's a derp. You don't know it. You don't know what derp means. And I was like, go look derp up on the internet. Looks it up on the internet. Came from Trey Parker and Matt. But it's still, it doesn't matter. It doesn't, you know what I mean? That doesn't matter. That doesn't matter to him.
That's so weirdly hurtful.
Yes. So,
And then does that make it not cool anymore? It's like,
yeah, of course.
Well,
no, of course, of course.
Yeah, but it's the way like, that no you matter. Said it isn't the
yeah,
way
yeah.
That...
It's like, yeah, whatever.
There's a whole section of pop culture that is derivative. You motherfucker.
Yeah,
like, no. You're not getting super upset like, about
you'll,
it.
You'll get it when you're 35.
Was there ever any conversation with any of the Family Guy people after the Manatee episode?
No, never. Never. It never has been.
Have you ever run into anybody at a thing?
No, we don't get invited to shit. You know, it's like we don't do the Hollywood parties really. I play board games at home.
Was the last time you went to a thing the Oscars?
I think that was about it. That was about the evening.
Oh no, I'm good, thanks, Katie.
I think it was literally about the last thing we got invited to. And then we did the Tonys and stuff, and we were very good at the Tonys. We were very good boys.
But that seems like the Tonys seems like a fun show, though. I mean, like the whole idea of putting on gowns and going to the Oscars is hilarious because the Oscars is so stuffy.
Just listening to people talk and
yeah, but also it's people and I understand, but you know, at the core of it, you know, you get paid for pretending. And yeah. I know it's more complicated than that, but at the end of the day, that's what it is. And yes, these stories are important, and there's a, you know, but...
But it is.
But it's so important.
Award shows are all about. It's, you know, these people need recognition.
Right.
You do award shows for people that are like, you know what, this guy did this big thing for cancer.
Right.
This guy did this big thing. We should recognize him. And right. And it's like the last people that need recognition. you've got, you know, 1,000 people that are the last people on earth that need any recognition.
Right.
And making a big recognition show out of them, you know.
You know, when I was just, for that, I spent that 3 months pretending to be that guy. I had no idea that this would be the, this is so important.
That being said, I want my Oscar so bad. Because I want my, what's it called, because I have a Tony, a Grammy, and a Emmy, and if you get the Oscar, then you're a EGOT, and there's not that many in the world.
Well, now, I mean, how come you guys didn't do another movie?
I don't know. I mean, I think I fell out. Movies are just such this gigantic commitment, and you're doing the same thing for so long, and South Park just became this beast. You know, we would have had to kind of make a choice to say, let's stop doing South Park, or at least let's take a few years off of South Park. And South Park was just something we just kept wanting to come back to, and we didn't want to hand it off. You know, we don't. When South Park, you know, when we're in that season, we are in the trenches. We don't have time to be thinking about other shit at all. You know?
Yeah, so. But I think because I know you've done other movies since Bigger, Longer, Uncut. But I just mean in terms of like doing another South Park or another musical or another a movie version of Book of Mormon or something.
Talk about it. We talk about it. And then we just kind of go hang out and play board games.
But that is so... I mean, but when you look at... It's like the history of what you guys have accomplished is so insane, because when you look at Spirit of Christmas, I remember that was like old school viral. It's like, oh, here's an unmarked VHS tape.
Yeah.
And it spread, and then it was legendary. And if people hadn't seen it, it was like, you haven't seen it?
Yeah.
And then... But watching that tape, we go, someday these guys are going to get nominated for an Oscar. They're going to win an Emmy, a Tony. They're going to win all these awards.
Yeah.
And so it really is a success story for anyone who's ever been told, like, you're not going to do anything with that. You have a weird sense of humor and you think farts are funny. What are you going to do with that?
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, but we've managed to build this whole.
Well, and the greatest thing about having it as a partnership. Like I said, I think our greatest asset was we were ready to pack up and go home at any moment. So there's been a lot of times, especially early on, that I remember a big one was when Paramount Pictures was like, no, you're not doing an R-rated cartoon musical. It's not going to be R-rated. It's going to be PG-13. And we were like, no, we want it to be R. And like, no, Beavis and Butthead was PG-13. This movie will not make any money. And we're like, okay, we won't do it. And they're like, you won't do it. You won't make, if you're not going to make this movie, the show's going to go down. You're going, and we're like, okay, fishing poles are in the car, bro. We're ready, dude. Like, and there were so many examples like that, that were not only us having each other to not give in, to be like, remember, we said, you know, but also having moments of just like, you know, this is all great and this is all cool, but we're going to do this. We're going to do what we think sweet. And we're not going to start becoming something we're not, and that's still what we are doing. You know?
Yeah, I know, but there's also there have also been some insane, amazing business decisions that I think probably changed the way things are done. Just in terms of, I've heard mythological stories of like, oh yeah, when they went to renegotiate in the early 2000s. There was nothing in the contract about the digital rights because that just wasn't the thing that anyone, big companies, knew what to do with. And we're like, and they go, hey, we're just going to, here's your contract to renew. Oh, wait, we'll take those digital rights. No, we own the, oh, shit, we don't own those.
It's pretty true. And it's, you know, to really get the real story, you'd have to talk to, you know, Matt's more the, you know, his dad was an economist and he was a math major. And he, you know, this is part of where a lot of this comes in. But we also have this amazing lawyer manager named Kevin Morris, who's a genius. And I don't know the exact story, but it really basically was, it was like in the year 2000 that we were renegotiating and we were basically like, you know what? You don't have to pay us that $50,000 bonus. Don't worry about it. Just give us internet rights. And they're like, internet rights? You can't even show this on the internet. It just gets all, clunky and whatever. And they're like, sure, you can have internet rights. And now here we are, you know, with Hulu. You know, it's basically like, it's pretty.
But there's only a handful of those stories, and some of them are like, Oh, sure, George Lucas, we don't need those toy rights. You take those toy rights. Who buys toys? Kids buy toys. What do they buy?
No, and there's been things where we've gone around town and talked to different people saying, hey, we want to do this Broadway musical about Mormons. And they're like, well, that's nice. We're not going to get it. And it was like, come on, just give us a little money. Just give us a little money. He's like, no. And it's like, finally, we're like, okay, we'll pay for it ourselves.
That's amazing.
I mean, that's, now it's like, thank God we paid for it ourselves.
Yeah, but also, you know, if someone else had, it might have been a different thing. And it's, it, you know, like you have complete autonomy over the things that you do. But I think that notion of I do what I do because I like it. And the second someone tries to change that, I just won't do it.
Yeah.
Because I feel like this industry is so fear driven and like, oh, my God, if I don't work and what's going to happen? And what if everyone hates me? And what if it's a, there's just such a socially now because of social media and political correctness, but also just the industry itself runs on fear. Just like our entire fucking emotional economy is fear-based right now.
Yeah, no, and as soon as the witch hunt starts for me, which I know it will eventually, that's what I'm saying. This witch will just be off fishing. I'm not going to be sitting here fighting for my, you know, I'm not going to be, no, please, I want to stay in Hollywood. And you know what I mean? I it's just so important to me. And all it's like, it's not. I love my daughter and my board games. Like, that's all I care about.
Someone's going to run in and go, oh my God, Trey, you're at the top of the trending. And then they're just going to hear, dit, 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 er, er.
Yep.
Drive to Colorado.
And everyone hates you. Okay, see ya.
Thanks, guys. It's been fun. Appreciate it. I was getting tired. I was getting tired anyway.
What took you so long?
God damn it.
Where did I lose you?
Look at the clues. You see how long I was trying to make this happen. But is this something that you think you'll just do indefinitely or...
Yeah, I mean, because again, you know, it's definitely not a never from day one and never now do Matt and I sit down at a table and go, okay, how can we be offensive? Who can we piss off?
Right.
How can we be mean? It's never that.
If you did that, it wouldn't be authentic.
It would have never worked. It would have never worked. You know, it really is. Our love of it comes out of, like I said, we laugh the hardest when it's like Butters dressing up, or Cartman dressing up like a robot and messing with Butters and things like that. Like, that's the shit that we love. The political stuff and the hardcore stuff and the politically incorrect stuff gets all the attention, you know, and you can do one of those things in one show. And people, blah, 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 blah. But to me, what was the rest of the show is why we're doing it. You know what I mean? And so,
but I think anyone who watches the show understands that it's not. And it sort of reminds me of like when Stern got really popular, then a bunch of copycat people were like, oh, you just got to say the word hooker a bunch. And that's without really noticing, oh no, but there's real substance and there's real emotion behind it and there's real storytelling behind it, which, you know, like there are South Park episodes where you get choked up. Like they're really emotional. It's not just, it's balanced so well. And I think that's when people try to copy that, they're just looking at that top layer.
Yeah.
Go, I don't understand. We put farts in our show. Come on, fucking show didn't.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
oh, because it's not just, you know, there's so many other things.
Yeah.
So, is there anything you can say about Fractured Butthole at the moment that just some sort of a tease?
Just a prayer. I could say a prayer.
Say a prayer over it.
To that moment, you know, it's a lot. You know, like I said, it's a lot of different studios and different cities and trying to make this thing come together. Man, it is tough. But it's you know, it's tough because we weren't going to just make Stick of Truth again. We wanted everything to be better, you know.
I'm looking at the board right now. I think any like really true gamer who is a fan would shit themselves if they could see what I'm seeing. It's just basically like a whiteboard and then just pictures of frames, and it's, you know.
Well, and then it's all algebra. You're all just sitting here connecting lines because you don't know where the player is going to go.
Yeah.
But and you've got to kind of guide them. But the least, for me, the least you can guide them, the better. That's being a good DM, you know. So
giving them just enough structure, to guide them. Well, this was great. I mean, is there any... Oh, Despicable Me 3?
Yeah, I guess that's why they said this.
I mean... Yeah, I know, people are going to see that anyway.
Yeah.
But it... The thing that I saw, it... And I asked Brett. I was like, so you just hired him, like I said before. You just hired him as an actor. He goes, yeah, and he was amazing. He was so great to work with. But your voice is so perfectly suited for that guy.
Yeah.
Because it's familiar, but it's different, and it just, and the character sort of looks like Billy Mitchell a little bit. Yeah. And it's
well, it was funny because I can't remember where it was when I got the ask, because no one asked me to do anything. I was like, oh, do you know the Despicable Me films? They want you to be the villain in the new one. And I was like, whoa. I was really like, wow, no one's ever asked me to do anything like that before. And I didn't know, you know, kind of where it had come from. I didn't know why they wanted that. And I, and you know, man, and right then, my girl was two. And I was like, right away, could see like, oh, going to the premiere with my daughter to this. And it's something of mine she can actually watch. You know what I mean? It's like something, you know. That, and I was like, that could be really fun. And since then, she's actually done some voices for South Park for Kyle's little brother, Ike. And so she kind of knows going and getting in front of a mic and doing voices. And then she came with me to one of the Despicable Me recordings and sat there on the couch and watched me do it. And the greatest thing was... we went to go take her to see, I think it was Sing or something like that. And the trailer came up, and no one had seen the trailer yet. And she remembered it from seeing me do the thing. And the trailer is, you know, like any trailer is all big and loud, and it does it, da-da-da-da, coming from, boom, ends, gets super quiet. And my girl goes, that's my daddy.
Aww, that's
and
so sweet.
I was just like, okay, that's totally why I did this. This is great, you know, and so.
I think you're also lucky that, because sometimes when people have kids, they get real weird about comedy. Like,
yeah.
Oh, now I gotta, you know, I can't, I don't wanna.
Yeah,
I,
yeah.
But it seems like you're able to, like, that's very separate, and, you know, like,
yeah,
it doesn't
no,
really.
She kind of for a while was going up to other people and asking them what voices they did, you know, like just random people
sure.
saying, so what voices do you do?
Like everyone has their own
yeah,
show.
Yeah, everyone does a voice, you know.
Yeah, and everyone's so, got their own show. And that's what they
but
do.
It's going to be a blast because the premiere's this weekend, and it's going to be really fun to take her to that.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I guess that's it.
Cool.
I mean, there's nothing, you know, we're almost at an hour. We covered a lot of stuff. We covered the game. Anything to leak about that? Any secrets?
I can't. Not without Matt. I'll let you know if there's really not much to leak, actually.
Everyone dies in the first 3 seconds.
Yep.
And then
it's all... No South Park characters the whole rest of the game.
Oh, does it ever bother... Would you say no one ever asked you to do anything... Does that bother you, or do you feel like, oh, people just assume I'm busy, or do you, because...
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you always feel like you're on the outside?
I never thought about it until then. I was like, yeah, nobody's ever asked me to do a voice. And it was just, you know, I mean, I'm friends with Bill Hader, and he gets asked like once every 3 days. And I'm like, but, you know, I think there's maybe that thing of, you know, it was interesting. It was not a gamble for them, but I'm sure they had to think a little bit about putting Despicable Me up Trey Parker. You know, some parents might go, I'm not taking my kid to see that.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's a bit of a brand, you know? So, there was a bit of a risk in that, but I think it was also just, you know, I'm just known in town. At first I thought people would really like it because people know I'm so into writing and scripts and structure. I can't help myself. When someone is struggling with something, I'm like, come on, let's go. Let's go spend 6 hours in the room and let's restructure it all. And let's figure it out. There's just something about my brain that loves that. And so I could have done that to this, you know. But again, I very purposely kept myself out of it.
Well, I think Illumination is such a strong brand that I think they give their audience a benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
And they know it's like, well, it's not going to be South Park.
Yeah.
And also, I feel like Illumination tends to lead with comedy and not like,
It's very French.
Yes. Yes.
It's very
yes,
French.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I, you know, appreciate it for that. I mean, it is, and that's what I realized in doing it too, was just like, being directed and seeing kind of what was important and what it was just like, it's, to them, it's so visual and it's so still... at its base kind of Jerry Lewis.
Right.
You know what I mean? That it really, and that's not a put down, you know, it really is just and that's why their stuff works so well around the world, you know, because it's not like Ameritrash Gaming where it's like, we're so into the theme and what does this mean? And what
right.
does this, you know, what does this represent? And what lesson did he learn? And there's so little of that in their movies,
right.
you know, that's just,
they're just
no,
fun.
We're just going to go in for fun, you know? And so,
and I think he also said that after you worked with the guy who does all the Minions, like you go, oh, there were some technical things that transmuted over to the member berries or something.
Yeah.
With just like the way that he recorded.
It's the same frequency. And I realize I'm like, there's just something about the Minions' voices, and I'm like, wait a minute. And I went and I asked him what frequency the Minions are at, and he told me. And I went home and did a thing on my computer where I took the mice from Cinderella and I sped them down that frequency, and you could hear the real voices.
Oh, shit.
Going, you know, come on, Cinderella. we gotta go. And it's like, it's the same frequency. So then I was like, oh, we're gonna do these member bears. I'm like, I know what frequency we're doing them at. There's a magic frequency that everyone goes, oh, it's cute.
Yes. You know? That some of the Disney figured out, like that yeah, someone yeah. figured out, like
in this Cinderella.
Is the, that this is this will pierce your ear in yeah, the right yeah. way and yeah. burrow right into your yeah. soul. But thanks, man. It's
yeah,
good to
thank
see you.
You.
I really
cool,
appreciate
you too.
It. All right, well, take care.
Cool.
Enjoy thank your burrito, you. Everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.